Greenside, the IGA podcast.
Also, Mike McCoy, the 2013 U.S.
Zach Johnson, now a two-time major champion after becoming the winner of the 144th Open Championship.
Welcome to Greenside, the IGA podcast. Clint Brown and Chad Pitts here with you. We're going to continue our discussion with Iowa Golf Hall of Fame member Jock Olson. If you haven't listened to the first part of that podcast, hit that rewind button, get back there, listen to part one, as well as any other episodes maybe you've missed. They're saved on all the podcast channels, Spotify, Anchor, Apple Podcasts, all that good stuff. So if you've missed a few and want to catch up over the weekend or when you got some free time, feel free to do so. Shoot me an email too, clint@iowagolf.org. Let me know what you think. Let me know who you want to hear from. Yeah, I'd like to get Tiger Woods and Colin Montgomery and all those boys on, but if you have somebody you want to hear on, let me know. All right. Now back to Jock Olson, Iowa Golf Hall of Famer.
Hey, Jock, you mentioned a couple times just a minute ago about hosting the Solheim Cup at Interlaken and then heading over to Sweden and helping with that, the Solheim Cup over there. Where you first started as a pro, Des Moines Golf and Country Club hosted the Solheim Cup in 2017. Did you have any conversations with Scott or any of the guys prior to hosting that, just because you had the experience you had? Or I'm sure they had it under control, but I'm just kind of wondering if that connection happens, you know?
I had a conversation or two with some Des Moines people about that event, and I believe it was Scott. You know, it was obviously a little while back, but yeah, I'm sure Scott and I talked, maybe shared some emails, but I was really disappointed. I forget what was going on and I couldn't get down there. But you know, I watched it on TV and it was a fantastic event. And, you know, I'm kind of hoping that because we did a great job in the Twin Cities with the Solheim Cup, that I think it was just a natural for another Midwest city like Des Moines and Des Moines Golf to have the event. And man, it was fantastic. And, you know, it's tough for the members to give up their clubs for things like this for, you know, a couple of weeks at a time and then all the preparation. But I think the members really enjoy being involved and being around great players and just the excitement and the publicity for the club. And, you know, I was very happy to see it went to Des Moines Golf and that they did such a fantastic job hosting it.
Jock, switching gears a little bit, you know, for somebody that's been in the, you know, the golf professional business for a number of years and been a lot of places and seen a lot of things. Jock, what would you tell, I mean, maybe for some advice for a young golf professional coming up or maybe a youngster that's thinking about getting into the business?
Well, I would say, number one, being outgoing is so important when you're dealing with, you know, a few hundred members or 600 members, whatever it might be. So I always said when I hired assistant golf professionals, I usually looked at personality first and golf skills second, because I feel like you can teach an assistant professional or a young person, young boy or young lady, you know, the ups and downs of playing the game or teaching the game, but you really, you know, they either have a personality or they don't. To me, that's hard to teach. So
right.
I would say, you know, for a person to work on their skills to be outgoing, personable, is very, very important in the golf business. And then the skills themselves, I taught a lot. And traveled with this golf school with several other great teachers. And that's how I learned. And I think it was Bill Strasbaugh, a famous guy in our association, who is now passed. But he always said, you should see, if you dare to teach, you should never cease to learn. So it may bug my wife, Sherry, once in a while, but I still have the Golf Channel on a great deal. And it's not just to an event. It's also to the teaching parts, whether it's Michael Breed or Martin Hall or anyone that I can still see if I'm doing the right things and maybe learn some new things. And I'm 72 years old. I'm in pretty good health. I'm still doing a little teaching and I just can't ever cease to learn to be a good teacher. So I think that's very, very important. And then, you know, to me, those are the two most important things. And then it's just a matter of getting experience around golf professionals who have a good reputation, who are known to be good at what they do. And then you learn how to run the tournaments, merchandise the shops, and you know, just be a master of many things to be successful as a head golf professional.
Hey, Jock, when it comes to teaching, I'm just curious, how would you self-assess yourself as a teacher? And what I'm kind of asking is, you know, anymore, a lot of people have their putting coach and their short game coach, and then they might have their full swing coach. If I was going to hire Jock Olson for a particular area of expertise, do you feel like you're stronger in any certain area or pretty well-rounded?
Well, I think where I'm the strongest is when I look at a player, and it could be a young person, an older person, a man or a woman, I really try to remember. And I think this is something Butch Harmon may have always said. And by the way, I got to know Butch because he was in the Quad Cities when I was in Cedar Rapids. But and he's a fantastic teacher. I always think I can't make anyone swing like me. And maybe there's a lot of people that wouldn't want to swing like me. And I can't make them swing like Tiger Woods, or I can't make them swing like Annika Sorenstam, because we're all so different physically. A mental part of the game, we're different. And so what I try to do is look at the basic fundamentals, whether it be grip, stance, alignment, tempo, whatever, of golf, and make sure that everybody has the basic fundamentals right. And then how we build their swing or improve their swing is, you know, you've got to be flexible on how you deal with different people, again, because of physical restrictions. You know, some people get a little angrier quicker than others, and you've got to settle them down. So, you know, you work mentally with them as well as with their golf swing. So I try to see what the student brought me and what are the maybe one or two or three things that I can do with their alignment, their grip, their tempo, their balance that might make them a better player, and try not to make them perfect, because you all may know there's a book called Golf is Not a Game of Perfect.
Yes. It's a great book, by the way.
Yeah. If you look at tour players, there's a lot of different swings out there, and there's a lot of great swings out there. I mean, Matsuyama pauses a long time at the top of his swing, and Tom Watson doesn't, you know, so who's right and who's wrong? It really just is a matter of getting the job done. They always say Furyk looks like he can swing his golf club in a phone booth. You know, you look at Tiger Woods, and you wouldn't last long there. So it's such a fun game to teach, and such a challenge that even at my age today, and maybe because of my experience, I really still enjoy helping people get better. And that's what it's all about, to see a smile on their face and to tell me they just shot the best score of their life or made a hole in one. I mean, those are the kind of things as golf professionals you'd love to hear as teachers.
I think it's great that you still are doing the teaching, and you obviously, you can tell by the way you just talked about it, that you have that passion for it. My favorite description, by the way, of Jim Furyk's swing was from David Faraday, who said he looked like he's trying to kill a snake in a phone booth.
Yeah.
Pretty accurate too, if you think about it.
For sure. There's some great guys that are a lot of fun in golf. And, you know, I was fortunate to be around some great teachers. I mentioned Butch. I didn't really work with him privately as far as what he does, but I went to several of his seminars, whether it be the PGA show or whatever. A guy named Bill Strasbaugh, who I mentioned earlier, I'll never forget. I was in Iowa City as an apprentice golf professional, and Bill was there, had a very great reputation in our association. He wore his glove on his left hand when he taught and spoke to us. Even though we were inside, he wasn't going to make, you know, hit a golf ball, but he always wore that glove. And I learned a lot from him. And then I became good friends and just saw this gentleman a couple months back, Jim McLean, who's known pretty well as a longtime great teacher. And now I think he's out here in Arizona. He used to be at Doral a lot, but Jim's a great guy. He and I hosted a national teaching and coaching summit out in California together. So we spent some time together, went to Augusta and watched one of the practice rounds there together. and Jim actually played in the Masters as an amateur. And he's not a bragging type of person, but I asked him one day when we were walking the fairways, "Oh, you played here as an amateur?" And we'd ridden over there in a rental car from Atlanta. He never mentioned that he'd played there in the Masters. And I said, "Well, okay, you played here as an amateur. How'd you do?" And he goes, "Well, I finished first low amateur." And I went, "Oh, okay, that's pretty good." So yeah, Jim, great guy to be around. Hank Haney, great teacher in our association. So, you know, I just tried to immerse myself in others that have been successful, and that's how I learned a lot of what I teach today.
Jock, to rewind just a little bit, you mentioned you got to know Patty Berg a little bit. Not to put you on the spot, but just curious if you had maybe one or two Patty Berg stories for us.
Yeah, I got a couple good ones. Patty was a big Wilson person. I mean, she was probably one of the first women to be endorsed by a big golf company. And she was, talk about a personality and an ambassador. I got three quick stories. Number one, Patty Berg and Carol Mann, who was the young buck and Patty was the older veteran, came and did an exhibition at Elmcrest Country Club. And I was chosen and one of my other junior golfer buddies at Elmcrest to caddy. And I caddied for Patty, and the other young man, his name's Mike Thompson, caddied for Carol Mann. So they had a match and it was great. And I got a lot of stories about the match, but I checked balls for her off the first tee as she gave an exhibition. I stood out in the fairway and I could catch her drivers in the range bag on one hop, one bounce without moving, which I learned that from my dad because he did hit the ball pretty straight too. And I shagged his balls. But so I caddied for Patty. And then I reminded her when I first met her at Interlochen and that I was her caddy at Elmcrest Country Club. I was 13 at the time at Elmcrest. And so when I met Patty, I was probably 44. So that was pretty neat to get back with her. And then when she was there for the Solheim Cup as the honorary captain, there was a maintenance crew member that came up to her with a golf ball. And he said, "Patty, would you sign this golf ball?" And she looked at it and it might've been a Titleist. And she said, "Young man," and he was probably 60 because she was 82 or whatever. She says, "Young man, you bring me back a Wilson golf ball and I'll sign it for you." But she wouldn't sign a Titleist.
stayed loyal for years and years there.
Yeah. And then the other thing, when Patty would visit, Sherry, sometimes we'd have dinner together with Patty, but if I was at the club and Sherry wasn't and I was with Patty, I'd come home and I'd say, "Gee, Sherry, my back's really sore today." And she goes, "Why?" And I says, "Because Patty started to shrink a little and crouch over." And I said, when I talked to her, I always had to lean down so that we looked eye to eye. And when you do that throughout the day, all of a sudden my back got kind of sore. But those were that was a good way to get sore because she was a fantastic lady, for sure.
Those are great.
Well, you know, my wife reminded me too that at Elmcrest Country Club as a 13-year-old on number two, it's a par five over a creek to an elevated green. Patty says to me, "How far do I have?" And I said, "Miss Berg, you have 180 yards." So she took out her four iron and she flushed it as she always does. And she hit it about 5 yards over the green. She put the club back in the bag and looked at me and said, "Young man, that's not 180 yards. She might have flushed it and hit it the best she's ever hit it. It's that it was my fault that I gave her the wrong yardage. And she's nice to me. But I think you all know tour pros, when they miss a putt or hit a bad shot, it's the wind that bothered the shot, or it's a spike mark that, you know, knocked the putt offline. And in my case, it was the caddy who made the mistake, not that Patty maybe, you know, hit the club the best she ever hit it that day. But so right. I remember that. Yeah. He scolded by Patty Berg and ended up being her golf pro, 30 years later. Pretty amazing.
Yeah.
Comes full circle, doesn't it?
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. Thanks again for joining us on the podcast. Appreciate it. Always good to catch up. We've been able to, you know, see each other at a few events over the years since I've been at the IGA. So look forward to talking to you soon.
Thanks. You guys too. Now, was there a Hall of Fame ceremony this year, this summer? I missed it.
Yeah. So we were able to finally hold an induction ceremony, and it was in September. And okay. then we inducted two classes because we still had the 2020 class. We were never able to induct right. in person. Right. And then we had our new 2021 class. And so the six new members, three for each year, went yeah. in late September at Des Moines Golf and Country Club was our host for that.
Oh,
it was a nice night, and it was, you know, in a lot of ways kind of refreshing to,
sure,
you know, have that happen again. So,
you know, this goes back to Marshalltown. I was in a different grade school than Jerry Johnson, but we played basketball against each other and obviously became friends. And then for him to take Joe's place, you know, and mm-hmm. Do the great job he did, I was really disappointed that I missed his induction. I'm very disappointed that he passed away as soon right. as he did it. So, Yeah.
It was Deb stood up and said a few words and yeah. she really did a nice job kind of with the acceptance of it and stuff. It was really yeah. cool to hear her talk.
I always came to Marshalltown for the Lennox Quakerdale.
Yeah, the Quakerdale. Sure. Yep.
Yeah. Yep.
I always came down with Paul Krause because obviously he and I were both in the Twin Cities and became friends and it was always fun. They usually sent one of the jets up for us, you know, from Lennox. And then one time we actually had to drive down, but, you know, to spend, you know, those hours in the car going back and forth with a Hall of Fame linebacker with the Minnesota Vikings, that was a treat, but not as much of a treat as to be able to come back to Elmwood Country Club all those years, you know, and see, you know, I got to be pretty good friends with Tom Davis and Johnny Orr. And a lot of great people around Iowa and the city. So
there's a lot of really good Johnny Orr and golf stories that float around.
You know, and there's the name you guys know, Lou King.
Yep.
Sure.
Yep.
He was. And Lou King, he put on an event out at the golf course in Marion, going brain dead right now on that one. Hunter's Ridge.
Yep.
Yeah, and the premier group was Aiden Fry, Bump Elliott, Tom Davis, and me. And as I look up, there's a football on my bookcase here, and the four signatures on the football, because we autographed them, and then we gave away some prizes, you know, to the players to raise money. I think it was for the Lions Club. I think they do something with glasses and sight, and Lou is involved with that. Yeah. And I look up there and Hayden Fry's signature was done with a different pen than the rest of us because it's still as dark as if he wrote it yesterday. And he had the neatest signature as far as reading it and kind of cursive that I've ever seen. And to this day, I remember that. So
that was Arnold Palmer's deal, right? Was whenever he signed his name, he was always yep. meticulous always about.
Said, if you're going to sign an autograph, at least make sure people can read it.
Yeah,
or know who wrote it. So yeah, I'll never forget that. But yeah, so there's just so many great memories of Iowa for sure, and days like that, and you know whether it's Elmwood or Hunter's Ridge, and you know you're just raising money for good causes, and you're around great people. So
yeah,
that never ends.
Well, Jock, like I said, appreciate you taking some time out of your day to talk with us and look forward to seeing you down the roads at some point, maybe at one of our events or a Hall of Fame induction ceremony, and wish you the best in 2022.
Thanks, you guys too.